More Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, about 5 minutes in, and happy to get Nicole Russo to round out, just in time, too, to round out our Daily Racing Form division coverage of the Breeders' Cup fields, the way the selection committee is, as we speak. They're arguing. In fact, I think there's actually a wrestling match right now on the floor. They're out of control. The selection committee setting up the pecking order of races like the Turf Sprint, which usually has about 38 entrants. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall for that selection committee? Some really competitive races on tap this year, it looks like.
Well, and some divisions will be very easy. They'll open the entries up, and, you know, Filly and Mare Sprint is going to have a short field, and it looks like the juveniles are, you know, it looks like there's room for everybody. But as it happens, you have been tracking the two of the races that are notoriously oversubscribed.
Absolutely. Sprint, and you know, it's counterpart sort of the juvenile turf sprint, the newest Breeders' Cup race on the block. Both of those, you know, consistently oversubscribed, and it certainly felt like in the weeks leading up to the pre-entry deadline yesterday that that's going to be the case, you know, again this year with both of those races.
Let's wander through this, and I know in the last couple of, you know, each week, you know, you and the correspondents, you know, we'll pick a topic and pick a horse sometimes, or in the case of Wesley Ward, you know, a whole barn, and talk about them, and at least from the North American standpoint, we've got a pretty good idea of who the major players are, and Wesley a big part of it, but also Larry Rivelli, who we have talked to on a regular basis, it seems, this summer and into fall, with one timer who, I mean, I think Wesley probably, what, Averly Jane is going to end up being the focus, but one timer is going to be a top choice in this race.
Absolutely. And, you know, I really liked what Larry Rivelli did with One Timer, you know, sending him out to California for the, you know, for the sort of local prep out there at Santa Anita, the speakeasy. sending him out there, letting him get acclimated, to California. At this time of year, you know, horses are, they did evolve as cold weather animals. And I think, certainly they tend to handle cold weather a lot better than humans do, and they handle it a lot better than heat in some cases. So at this time of the year in the fall, perhaps shipping from a colder climate in the east or the Midwest into the California climate, certainly it's not a hard and fast rule, but some horses can struggle with that more than others. So I like the tack he's taken with running in the speakeasy and leaving one-timer out there to let him get acclimated a bit, you know, to that heat. He won't be one of these horses who's coming in, you know, sort of at the 11th hour.
Well, and in addition, you know, went to Canada and, you know, had, you know, it seems like, you know, he's got that battle-tested kind of armor, you know, built around him a little bit. He's done a lot already, and you know, not that Wesley, you know, doesn't put his horses sometimes through a bit of a gauntlet. And I'm just reaching for the, there we go, there's the juveniles. That's not the juveniles. There we go. This is the juvenile.
Yeah, certainly Wesley's horses, as you're alluding to, you know, very, very well traveled as well. These are not horses, you know, you would think, again, there are no hard and fast rules because they're all individuals, and sometimes they wake up the day of and just say, oh, well, I'm having a bit of a day here, as anybody who works with horses will know. But, you know, certainly Wesley's horses have all shown the ability to ship and, you know, to perform well. Averly Jane has run well on a number of tracks and, you know, on both dirt and turf. Twilight Gleaming, who's been a bit, you know, thrown to the back burner by, you know, by her stablemate's recent impressive performance. She's certainly put in some frequent flyer miles.
Yep.
And, you know, the same is true of the older horses in the turf sprint.
We'll get to the elders in a minute. Let's touch on some of the other domestic and invader types in the juveniles. You've got, I'm just looking actually at the way we've got them lined up based on David Aragona's morning line. So you've got Averly Jane and Twilight Gleaming as the top two. A one-timer, 6-1 on David's line. Then the first of the potential Euros, Armor, the Al Shakab No Name Never colt, coming out of the big effort at Newmarket.
Yeah, and, you know, certainly No Name Never has been, we haven't gotten a chance to see as many of them in the U.S., but, I mean, in terms of siring, you know, he was an outstanding turf sprint runner in his day, and, you know, he has just turned out runners very much in his mold.
Coming out of the middle park, the group won and beaten less than a length, and actually was just beaten a neck in the Flying Childers as well at Doncaster. Has done nothing but keep top company. The Prix Mornay, fourth there, beaten two by Perfect Power, who arguably is the best in Europe among the juveniles. So Armor, the No Name Never colt for Al Shakab, absolutely a serious consideration.
Absolutely. And I will inject that, you know, my colleague Marcus Hirsch, you know, has been working on sort of a rundown of all the European candidates for the Breeders' Cup races. And, you know, he'll be kind of giving his impression, you know, of that form and of some of those top horses, you know, to help you evaluate a little bit some of these horses who are coming over, who they've been running against, the kind of company they've been keeping, and, you know, their form coming into these races. So I think that's absolutely going to be a clip it, save it, a terrific guide to the European candidates, not only for this race, but for all of the Breeders' Cup events.
Talk a little bit about Quick Susie and some expectations there. Aaron Wellman, of course, and Eclipse, and the unbelievable Ascot performance, and, you know, then actually went to DeVille to the Mornay and did not fare well. But this has been, you know, this has been the target, you know, from early on.
Absolutely. You know, with obviously American-based ownership, they kind of circled the, you know, the juvenile turf sprint on their calendar, and they've been working backward from that. And anything else that she did, I think, was going to be regarded as a bonus. obviously, you know, the very good run early on and then tailed off a little bit. They took the tack that they're going to freshen her up for this race. And just knowing that this has, you know, been their primary goal all along, you know, I think that can be dangerous when a horse has been targeted for a specific spot and you kind of know, okay, anything else is just a bonus.
Some other potential invaders. How about Castle Star? There's Twilight Jet.
Twilight Jet already with, you know, 10 starts under his belt. You want to talk about a battle-seasoned horse. You know, that would certainly be him. And he's coming off, you know, a career-best effort.
Back to North American interests. And we haven't mentioned Derry Nain for Christophe Clément and Waterville Lake. This is a horse that we noticed this summer at Saratoga, the New York bred, and went up to Woodbine and won that Woodbine Cares. And, you know, the 5 furlong distance, very germane to what we're going to see. Swing back to Wesley, Coffee Maker. Coming off a couple of solid enough efforts, failed as the favorite in the Kentucky Downs Juvenile Sprint, but was a good second to Averly Jane, the stablemate, in the Indian Summer.
And, you know, Coffee Maker, you know, faded a little bit late in that race at Kentucky Downs, but often, you know, those races, because of the unique and undulating turf course at Kentucky Downs, those races can sometimes play, you know, like races that are a little bit longer than their carded distance.
Yes.
So coming back off a bit of a break, no surprise that she got a little bit leg weary late and really improved, I thought, in the Indian Summer when no one was going to catch her stablemate that day.
What about Bubble Rock? I haven't heard a word since the Matron. Is Brad Cox Johnette Anthony still good for this?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a horse who winds up
cross-entering.
You know, because he can pre-enter two races. It
right.
wouldn't surprise me if this is a filly who winds up pre-entered in both the Juvenile Turf Sprint and the Juvenile Fillies Turf, and then you know, they kind of make their decisions once they see what the selection committee has done and where the ground lies.
There you go. And we know, for instance, of Christoph's other Slipstream, I know,
yes.
was going to stretch out no matter what. There was not a question about him where he was headed.
Yep, that was very much their intent.
The Juvenile Turf Sprint, and tomorrow we'll get a handle on what we're looking at. Let's turn to Nicole's other responsibility, and that's the full-fledged turf sprint. And this addition and you know, the sharp distance, Nicole, kind of taking a, not a toll necessarily, but it is making some connections, you know, have to really think about, you know, what they're going to do. And I bring up my friend Lee Einsiedler, who is absolutely been in a quandary with Casa Creed, for instance, had a win and you're in the Jiper, but is this too sharp for him? And also stylistically trying to come from, you know, from off of it, which doesn't necessarily, you know, based on the numbers, not necessarily a path to success, but the field coming together for the turf sprint. Some thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, again, this is this is another race, you know, that's going to be headed up by a Wesley Ward horse. My colleague Brad Free has Golden Pale as, you know, the favorite on his early line. Golden Pale, it's very interesting. In the three prior runnings of the Juvenile Turf Sprint, he is the first one who's going to come back in the Turf Sprint or in the Breeders' Cup at all. So I think that's, you know, that's really interesting, the campaign this horse has put together, you know, and the fact that he's come back. And, you know, another one with a well-traveled campaign this year and got a bit of a late start, won impressively at Saratoga. Just turned in a bit of a head-scratcher in the Nunthorpe, where he was just, you know, sort of never in the bridle and never involved, and then came back and shook it right off with a win in the Woodford at Keeneland over Extravagant Kid, another American-based runner who spent a lot of time abroad this year and who was coming back off a bit of a layoff, and I thought ran very well. You know, he's an honest horse. He always shows up no matter where he's running, what course he's running on. And, you know, the European contingent, I think, is going to be very interesting this year. Obviously, that was a breakthrough win last year when Glass Slippers, the first European-based winner of the turf sprint. She's expected to be pre-entered and to come over again this year. And but, you know, her trainer, Kevin Ryan, has actually been a bit more bullish this year on Emirati Anna, who, you know, he has said all along, I think this is a horse who's really going to love that, you know, the firm turf at Del Mar. I think he's tailor-made for this year's race. And, of course, A Case of You coming off, you know, the big win in France is another horse who's thrown himself into the mix. I think, you know, we have a very strong core of well-traveled American runners, a very strong core of European runners, and then, you know, a number of very consistent horses that are sort of getting lost in the shuffle. I think it'll be an interesting wagering race, to be sure, because, you know, we haven't even mentioned yet a horse like Lieutenant Dan, who obviously loves Del Mar.
Point well made. We also have got to talk about a couple of runners that seemingly are coming in on a bit of a high, and Rusty Arnold and Gear Jockey, I mean, just absolutely brilliantly campaigned with the $1 million race at Kentucky Downs in mind and pulled that off brilliantly, wins there. And not that this is an afterthought, but you know, certainly he's got to be discussed. Should probably bring up Beer Can Man, who made a terrific run at Philadelphia in the Turf Monster. And here's Mark Glatt with an opportunity, you know, to run back here. There is the matter of that Hollywood Talent positive that it probably ultimately elevates Beer Can Man, and you wonder how that's going to work toward possible inclusion, or, you know, where he ends up, you know, on the preference list that the committee is going to consider today. You got any news about Beer Can Man?
No, I really don't. But I will say that, you know, if he makes it into the field, here's another horse, you know, who's shown some local form, who should like the course that he finds.
Well, you've got a couple of horses you referenced, including Extravagant Kid. Hadn't heard. I know Brendan Walsh. They were waiting to see about a decision. They were going to enter or not. Do we know anything
with Extravagant Kid?
Yeah,
I believe he's going to be pre-entered. Yes.
Okay. All right. Wasn't positive. And also Brendan, the Learjet, who came over and won that Franklin Simpson.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the races at Kentucky Downs, and you know, the Learjet won and Gear Jockey won, and these are races, you know, if you look at the fields that have just you know, sort of grown in stature and grown in quality. And yeah, you mentioned Gear Jockey, you know, targeting that rich prize, but I don't think this is an afterthought race at all. You know, Rusty Arnold just perennially strong in these turf sprint races.
Nice to have the defending winner coming, and then the other interesting names. And invariably, when they open that box, and then when they announce tomorrow, there'll be some names that we haven't even heard, right? That just seem to pop into this race just out of nowhere.
I'm sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's the thing. You get a horse who, you know, who has shown form in the past, especially on the course, or who starts coming along strong. And, you know, yeah, why not take a shot? Because these races, they typically draw overflow fields. And, you know, they become so wide open on occasion. You know, there are horses, you know, Fast Boat, Kamari, who have major victories this year, who we haven't even mentioned yet. You know, these are going to be very wide open races, I believe.
Well, we'll look forward to how this field morphs and who ends up, whether O'Brien, tosses somebody into this. And and until last year, of course, there hadn't been a, the expectation when this race was developed and added to the Breeders' Cup lineup, the expectation was that, oh, Euros will fare well. But it took a long time for a Euro to find the winner's circle in this race.
Yeah, absolutely. More than a decade. And I will point out that, you know, Glass Slippers came over last year having already, you know, run over a left-handed course, having already seen a bit of what she was going to see in America. So I think she was, uniquely prepared. And, you know, her form this year is not that far off of her form last year. She's, you know, a bit of a belated start to her campaign, but she's run in the same final preps. She's been third each time, running against some of the best horses in Europe. And, you know, knowing that she has shown that affinity for the left-handed courses, you know, certainly Del Mar going to be a very different course than Keeneland at this point of the year. But, you know, I certainly don't discount her. I think she'll be a healthy price and still comes in with a chance.
You know, the amazing thing, when you talk about the fact that until last year that imports had been shut out in this race, let's also acknowledge that it took like a miraculous ride from Tom Eaves to win this race with Glass Slippers. I mean, if you ran that same that same scenario 100 times, Wet Your Whistle, the Trombetta long shot, would have had his share, and Leinster as well might have gotten by. So it really took a rabbit out of a hat from a jock standpoint, and Eaves pulling that off. I mean, as Nick Luck said, recapping, he said he'd watched Eaves his whole career. He said it was the best ride that he had ever turned in, that Nick had ever seen from him. I mean, it was miraculous.
Yeah, and just I'm glad you brought that up, because it was just a truly stellar ride. And, you know, just that luck and, you know, sort of the holes that open and the ride you're able to give, that, you know, plays a huge role in these races that are, you know, that draw full fields and that are over in less than a minute. I mean, you run the race another 10 times and perhaps Imprimis does not get into the trouble that he does.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why these races are so wide open and so exciting to watch. You know, there could be a horse, you know, who wins this race, who goes off at 10-1 or 15-1. But, you know, after the race, we're saying, you know, gosh, that horse made total sense. And just, you know, the cards fell his or her way.
Well, I already know. In fact, Andy was just with us, Andy Serling. And I, for, as an example, Andy asked the question on Twitter the other day, what exactly is the appeal of Golden Pal at a short price in this race? I mean, he's ready to bet again. So anxious for this. This is one of the fun. Really, has been one of the fun additions, and the juvies too. The juvie race just as fun, and Nicole does a great job tracking it. And we'll look forward to fields and decisions from everybody. Let's Nicole talk about all the other things that you're covering. That includes day two underway at Fasig for this last roundup of yearlings.
Yeah, and, you know, coming in, everybody sort of said, well, I think this sale is going to be very strong. I think there are people who have still, been shut out at the yearling sales because the market has been so strong all season, and they know that, you know, this is their final shot to get in there, this four-day sale this week that concludes the major market yearling sales in North America. And certainly, you know, the sales started off yesterday holding up some of those predictions. Gains across the board, improved gross, average, median, and improved clearance rate, which certainly shows, you know, some urgency, not only from people to get horses bought, but from people, you know, consigners and breeders to get horses sold, so they're not carrying, you know, the continued overhead on them if they don't sell them this season. In competition at the top, driving the price on yesterday's sale topping colt by Tappet up to $700,000, just on the first day of this four-day sale, and of course, you know, alphabetically, you can't control where the perceived best horses in the catalog are going to fall. But I think it's a good sign to see that kind of price on day one of a four-day sale. Certainly shows that people are willing to stretch for horses. And, you know, his price would have topped any of the last, three editions of this sale. And the most expensive horse sold at Fusig October since the $700,000 colt that topped the sale in 2017, which turned out to be a record renewal of the sale. So I think we're, they started off well, and we're looking for continued momentum this week.
There's already today, you've got a $300,000 session topper right now, and this is a Hill and Dale consigned colt by Curlin. Hartley Dorenzo spending $300,000 on a pinhook. This is the family, of course, of Silver Bullet Day. And Silver Bullet Way has already produced Governor Charlie and her dam, the wonderful Silver Bullet Day, whose name came up earlier this morning, talking about Breeders' Cup winners.
And you mentioned Hartley and Dorenzo, and they've... they've really stepped up their game in terms of pinhooking recent years, saying, well, we're going to stretch a little bit more to buy, the higher-end yearlings in hopes of having higher-end pinhooks, and that's certainly worked out for them. And you look at the top prices so far just today, you have Hartley Dorenzo in there, PickView LLC in there, Topline Sales in there, Scanlon Training and Sales, just in the top 10 prices just so far today. And certainly their participation, number one, expected to see the pinhookers out in force at this sale because, as I mentioned, with, just the strength of the market, particularly with end users in some of the earlier sales, such as Keeneland September, these pinhookers have really had a hard time getting their hands up and getting the stock for next year. So they were definitely going to have to come in and play this week. But the fact that they're... spending and stretching for horses and involved in some of the top prices really says a lot about what the strength that they expect in the two-year-old market this coming season in 2022.
There was no doubt, and we kept seeing the pinhookers getting I wouldn't say frustrated, but that they everybody we heard just kept moving on down the road, down to OBS and Timonium, and now back because they're running out of racetrack to fill the stalls for the winter.
Yeah, and certainly moving on, and hey, they don't after this in terms of the yearlings, they don't have anywhere to move on. And it's really interesting to watch how all the marketplaces feed into one another. Certainly we had a good two-year-old market this year. The pinhookers came to these yearling sales, flush and ready to restock. And, they've been stymied a bit, so they're going to have to stretch here, which could drive the numbers up. And then, you want to flip it around and, you talk about the competition, and I get the end users were certainly knocking heads with one another, didn't have an easy time buying yearlings either. So I think we're going to have a very interesting weanling market coming up in November and into January and February, because perhaps some of these end users are going to say, hey, it's getting so difficult to buy yearlings in this marketplace, let's go out and try to identify some quality horses early. But then by the same token, you have the weanling to yearling pinhookers looking at the situation and saying, hey, if I get a nice weanling to pinhook, perhaps I can make a score in 2022. So I think the competition, for weanlings at these upcoming sales is going to be fierce as well. It's a wheel, it's a cycle that keeps, sort of turning and feeding into the next segment of the marketplace.
Well, and once we get done on Thursday, respite ahead of the November sales, and in fact, I think yesterday. Was it come yesterday? I think it came yesterday. The November sale catalog, the one that you keep, the one that goes on the shelf with the pictures and the glittering array of top bloodstock and broodmare prospects and so forth. Got that yesterday. So once we get this sale wrapped up, we focus on Breeders' Cup for a fortnight and 10 days and then right back to Keeneland and Fasig for what is always a fascinating few days. Nicole, the other topic that I wanted you to riff on, the report on Mayor's Bread. And it just came out, so plenty of analysis yet to come, but some early impressions of what it offered?
Sure. Well, heck, I think, you know, the big storyline when you look at it is it just Into Mischief and his sons. You know, really, I mean, obviously Into Mischief's dominance in recent years has been well chronicled. Two-time reigning leading sire, what, on top of the list this year and well on his way, I think, to breaking his own single season earnings record. His sons at stud have gotten off to a phenomenal start on the racetrack, and you're seeing that reflected in their popularity in the breeding shed. You know, Golden Sense, Authentic, and Practical Joke taking the top, you know, three slots in terms of Mare's Bread. Golden Sense, I would expect his popularity to continue to rise. You know, bred this stellar book before even recording, you know, this past month, his first great career grade one winner and going to Vegas to his Breeders' Cup bound. You know, so Golden Sense poised to reach some new heights. And I'll admit that I haven't parsed through, you know, the mares they covered individually for every stallion yet, but I did go through Authentic's first book of mares and really some prominent proven producers in Authentic's book. You know, the dams of Dreyfong, Exaggerator, you know, the dam of Shanghai Bobby, the dam of Ayatapa, you know, really some nice proven producers in Authentic's book. Certainly, he's going to have every chance to succeed at stud. So, yeah, Into Mischief, eighth himself in the nation in terms of mares covered with, you know, his sons making up the top three. And going, you know, deeper down the list, a name that jumped out at me was, you know, War of Will. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe, you know, that he was in the 130s, 140s. And, you know, that's a solid number for a first-year stallion and a very high number in general for a Claiborne Farm stallion. They tend to be a bit conservative with the books. So that tells me that, you know, War of Will, that, you know, very versatile dual grade one winner on dirt and turf, son of Warfront, you know, he was really in demand his first season. So I'll be curious to see how, you know, that plays out as well.
That's an interesting name to pluck out, and I thought there were few things that not that they raised eyebrows, but how about Vekoma with the 222 mares?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a function of, you know, first of all, Vekoma winning the Met Mile, showing that miler speed that's so you know, that's so valued in American racing today. I think the Met Mile is still a stallion-making race. The Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile turning into a stallion-making race. You know, you saw it this year in the sale ring with City of Light. I think that miler-type ability still very much in demand in American racing. Vekoma benefiting from that. And certainly Vekoma, you know, benefiting from the fact that he's a son of Candy Ride. Candy Ride turning out very good sons at stud, you know, and that's just continued to prove out this year with Twirling Candy siring his first classic winner in Rombauer, with Gun Runner, you know, running away with the freshman sire race with, you know, multiple grade one winners. You know, so Vekoma certainly had the tools to be a popular horse.
Caravaggio, 174 covers. Maximus Mischief, 171.
Another son of Into Mischief.
Yep, there it is. Here's one. You know, it's funny because when stallion signings come out, you know, sometimes people see the names and they think, oh, who's going to breed to that sire? And you know, then this is you know, the peek behind the curtain. Global Campaign got 177 mares.
Yeah, you know, very well-bred horse who obviously in a position at Windstar Farm and with, you know, his ownership team behind him where he had, you know, the people behind him who were going to send the support in terms of mares as well.
Very, very interesting looking just... and I know that I think it was in your piece that you noted McLean's Music roaring into the top five.
Yeah, and you know that's a result of, you know, again, some of his early success and his success last year, you know, with several Grade One winners, with some of the top buyer figures of the year. You know, so off that success in 2020 comes roaring back in, you know, 21 with a large book of mares to rank fifth in the nation.
And because he, let's see, because if he started his first crop would
his
have been.
His first foals were two in 2016, I believe.
16, so 16, 17, 18. 19. So it's actually he's at that key juncture because the number had dipped, and this past year, and that's one of the things that we were make reference to the John Nayrud. You don't draw a conclusion on a stallion until he's had seven crops, and McLean's Music right at that absolute juncture. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, and you know, certainly, you know, you see those curves with stallions. Like, you know, Gunrunner was a bit higher, you know, in recent years, and now this year, again, the breeding season taking place before we really got into the two-year-old racing. So Gunrunner dipping down out of the top 20 with 168 mares, sort of, you know, perhaps as people, you know, said, hey, let's, you know, wait and see how they perform, how they sell, all of that. And, you know, of course, off his roaring success this year, I would expect that number to be higher next year. You know, and then, of course, again, you have to factor in, you know, sort of, you know, the different farms and the different breeders and the approaches that they take with their horses. You know, again, I'll go back to Claiborne Farm. Claiborne Farm is not going to be worried, per se, that, oh, well, War of Will bred 143 mares this season, and Authentic, who is also a first-year stallion, bred, you know, 80 more mares than him, because, the farms take different approaches, and that's okay. Certainly both have had their share of successful stallions and, you know, successful runners bred by their stallions.
Well, there's a lot. There's tons to dig into in this, including the regional markets. We'll talk more about the report of Mare's Bread with Sid tomorrow. But Nicole, outstanding. I appreciate all of the timely coverage as we get ready for Breeders' Cup release tomorrow on the pre-entries. And what's your Breeders' Cup responsibilities next week?
you know, supporting the team with, you know, the horses that are still here in Kentucky. And of course, I'll be watching to see, you know, if we get any major sales updates from the Breeders' Cup. Of course, we always have the contingent of, you know, mares going directly from the, you know, from the Breeders' Cup to the sales, which this year they have an extra day to make the turnaround with Basic Tipton on Tuesday and Keeneland beginning on Wednesday. You know, so as well as, you know, the mares going themselves, you know, we have the dams of Breeders' Cup candidates and weanling half or full siblings cup candidates and, you know, freshman sires who can make an impact and stallions who will be retiring to stud after the Breeders' Cup whose fees will be announced at that point. So certainly, you know, one of my major beats and responsibilities will be watching for you know, the impacts of the Breeders' Cup on the bloodstock market, particularly in the immediate future with the sales.
Excellent. Well, we'll be watching, and you follow Nicole, of course, on Twitter, and her tremendous work. Whatever responsibilities, whatever they throw at her, she's ready. And I include Finger Lakes in that of late. You've been doing the advances and the recaps.
My home track, Rochester, New York.
There you go. We were just in Rochester Saturday to see the new baby, and in fact, the kids moved even closer to Farmington. They moved from Irondequoit down toward Mendon, sort of Mendon Victor. Yeah, so they're even closer off the thruway. So we were just there and. Got to spend time with the new grandson, which was a lot of fun.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Nicole, this was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nicole Russo, DRF Russo, on your Twitter. It does a tremendous job. And is, I guess, not coming out to Del Mar, but plenty of DRF coverage on hand. But I can tell you, based on... A text exchange with Lee that Casa Creed only entered the mile. No sprint for Casa Creed. All right? So you can look for him in the mile. And you can look for Papo joining us now. Papo Morales, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Papo, we'll do some review and maybe see if we got a couple of Keeneland ideas for tomorrow. I mean, when we talked last week, actually, the Keeneland Wednesday ideas from Form to Win were outstanding. But I don't know if you were listening earlier. I referenced that in addition to the visit, I wanted you to take some Amwager time, put on your other hat. And I've been following discussions that online of, you know, the ongoing frustrations regarding late odds changes, and you know, there's certain solutions that and attempts to mitigate it. NYRA's gone out of their way to try to, you know, make it more fair for, you know, the everyday player. But you can talk a little bit about the tools at Amwager, because if players are concerned about this, there's ways on their platform to get at least anticipate where things are heading and flesh those out for everybody.
Sure, Steve. So when you see those late odd changes, they can be a factor in many things. Number one, depending on the pool sizes, during the week you see them a lot more often, but the pool sizes are relatively low. But even on the big days, you know, Belmont Park or Saratoga at Keeneland, you'll see them, and that's just because of you know, some of the large money dumps that are coming in from some of those computer groups. And some of those you can anticipate just if you're watching the odds. So the way, and I'm not exactly sure how these computer groups work, but I've talked to a couple of people. They don't siphon all their money in at the very last instant. They do it periodically throughout, you know, while the pools are open. So you'll see a horse that's maybe 10-1, you know, with 10 minutes to go, and then he'll drop down to 7-1, which is a pretty big drop. So that's them slowly putting money into the pools, but then you'll see them creep back up. And a way that we identify that on Amwager is we highlight the odds on the horses that have a shift of more than 10% of the pool money. So they'll suddenly turn green. So you can start to identify which horses are, you know, taking money throughout the countdown, basically minutes to post. And then what we use is true odds, which we factor in the double pool. Basically, the double pool has almost as equal strength as we use on the win pool. And then we do a little bit of the exact, and if there's a quinella pool, we also factor those in. But those give you a better idea of where the horse is finally going to end up. Because, you know, with 8 or 9 minutes to go, if the horse is 15-1 and the true odds are saying he's going to be 8, you can almost guarantee he's going to be at a minimum 8-1 and probably a little bit shorter because we don't exactly know how much money is going to come in that last splash. So I've seen a couple of cases last week, especially at Keeneland, where the horse was 15-1 and True Odds had him at 9-1 and they ended up going off at 7-1. So there are ways that you can kind of predict where that late money is going to come from.
And that, I mean, it doesn't solve the problem, but it does at least, you know, have you more prepared to anticipate where the number is going to be, you know, when it's computed. And I think if everybody at least has a feel, because what they're doing, I mean, invariably, I mean, if you're an everyday player, you're a lot of people that are tracking the will pays and the prob. I mean, the probables, not the will pays, but the probables. They base their bet on where the probables are, and if you know and can anticipate the direction and have a sense, it will make it at least more palatable. I don't think we're going to shut these bots off anytime soon, and they can't become a bigger proportion of the handle. I mean, it's already in a scary, critical level. So I think if people understand where the number might logically end up, it can offset at least some of this frustration.
Right, Steve. It's not gonna solve all the problems, but it does give you a better idea. You know, it's a lot easier to digest a 8-1 down to a 6-1 in the last flash, as opposed to, if you're looking at the regular odds, 15-1 down to 6-1. The appearance looks a lot worse.
In addition, there's also a topic we haven't had. We've been short for time. And I know you wanted to explain the dutching tool, and take a couple of minutes and do it, because it's a topic that a lot of, especially neophyte players and fledgling players, they hear it and they don't necessarily know what constitutes that kind of a betting approach.
Sure. So dutching is a way of, it's really an ROI tool, trying to make the most of your betting combination. So take, for example, and you can use it, Amwager, we have the dutching tool built into the platform. You can use it on the win pool if you wanted to bet more than one horse to win, especially if you like two prices. You can use it on the exacta pool, and then you can also use it on the double pool. But what you do, like take, for example, if you're playing an exacta, and you like, let's say, the 5 horse, and you like underneath, you like the 7 and the 8 horse. Now, the seven horse is maybe a long shot, 24-1 or something. And then the 8 horse is logical, who's 4-1. But you think one or two of those horses could finish second. So what most people do is they'll just box the combination. But when you dutch, you're going to appropriate a different dollar amount depending on what the current odds are. So if you were going to bet $20 on that combination, you would put an exact of $16 on the 5-8. So that's the 8 horse that is, 4-1 or 9-2. And then you'd put $4 on the longer shot, exact of 5-7. So what you're trying to do, Steve, is maximize. So if you're right, you're trying to try to get your highest payout given the dollar amount you're investing.
And how is it present on the screen?
Oh, it's simple. It's just you're just keying in the horses that you like. You click the Dutch button, Dutch Exacta. You indicate how much you want to spend, $20, and then you just hit the horses that you like, and the system calculates what the bet should be.
And see, and this these are this is a. Sort of the next generation aspect that I think players need help with when they're developing the, you know, their understanding, and you know, having, I think, you know, we spend a lot of time handicapping and discussing the handicapping method, and not nearly enough even knowing how much, you know, we recognize this fact. We need to spend more time on that portion, on taking the bankroll and then applying it to the opinions, and having tools like this. And this is the part that I think people want more time spent and need more help gaining, you know, gaining a better understanding of you know, how to attack you know, the opportunities. I think people get to a point where they're confident with their handicapping, but the incomplete portion is the bet structure and bet choice, and that's where, you know, we talk about the fact that it's a complex game all the time, Popo, and so forth. It would be less complex if people, I think, had, you know, a better understanding of how to approach it once they get to, you know, the critical mass of their handicapping comprehension.
Yes, Steve, it's two separate games. It's the handicapping game and then the betting game. And you can become a really good player when you can excel in both. And that's kind of what, and it's a learning process. It is, and I mean, the great thing about the Dutching tool is you don't have to put any thinking into it. It's still basically going off your handicapping. It's just structuring your bet so that if you hit, you're maximizing your dollar investment.
Well, one tool that is simple and fast and cheap and efficient, Form to Win, and literally just the pushing of a couple of buttons to let an algorithm tell you who Form to Win and the analysis is pointing toward. And we've been playing around with some distance settings to help. What do we got coming into tomorrow, Keeneland?
Yeah, I looked at, I was thinking they had that all-turf pick three, but they're only running two turf races tomorrow, so that's been pushed back till Thursday. And I was going prize shopping, Steve, so a lot of the races I had to pass on just because they were favorites. But I found you had Jason Barkley on earlier, and actually Jason was in my equine class at U of L, so we were all in the same. Yeah, same group. It was Jason, myself, Liz Crow. Destin Heath at Windstar, they were all in
our, how about that?
All in one big class. Yeah, so it was a good class. We're all in the industry in different capacities. But yeah, Jason talked about his horse Cave Run in that fourth race at Keeneland tomorrow, 6.5 starter allowance, and he absolutely fits on Form to Win. So, like, I know he said, mentioned there's a lot of speed in there, so if the speed does come back at 15-1, he's worth an investment. And then Keeneland Race 7, which is a mile and a 16th on the turf, I went ahead and clicked on the filter for turf-rated good or yielding. I don't see any way that it's going to be firm. We're not getting out of the 50s today here in Kentucky, and we did get some rain over the weekend, so I'm going to assume that it's going to be rated good, possibly yielding, but more than likely good. And so it moved up some price horses in that race. More than unusual is the favorite, but it moved up a horse called Barista, who's the 8 at 8-1, who has proven form on good turf, and then a bomb maybe to include in the lower exotics is Timeless Rose, the 3 horse at 30-1, proven form on a turf course rated something other than firm or fast.
Excellent. Popo, I appreciate it. Talk Friday.
Thanks. Yeah, sounds great, Steve. I'll talk to you later.
Popo Morales, everybody. PapaCore1 on your Twitter. Form to Win on Twitter with the number 2. And visit Form to Win. Download 2 free races a day and get a feel for it. It's pretty amazing. Thanks to Popo and Nicole Russo with plenty of bloodstock and sale and Breeders' Cup news. Andy with a really fun, whatever it was, 45 minutes. That was great. Jason Barkley. Nice to get Jason on to congratulate him on the graded stake win. That's quite a distinctive group from U of L there that Papo laid out. Liz and Jason, Destiny. Pretty cool. Tuesday race action, parks in Indiana and more. And tomorrow, 11:30, we'll be a half an hour into the pre-entries for Breeders' Cup. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. If you missed anything, 9 o'clock, or I should say 6 o'clock, replay, 6 to 9, and at the website later for archive and pod. Talk to you in the morning. Thanks.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.